Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. At the Races, the Friday weekend preview, but also reviewing and checking in on the Keeneland sale. Book one, just an unbelievable success. And book two tomorrow and Sunday, and then all the way through till the 23rd. And John Sakura of Hillandale joins us for maybe a little pulse check. And John, congratulations for you and for the farm and for your clients, a great start to the Keeneland sale.
Thanks very much, Steve. It's a vibrant market, and everybody was in attendance. And, anytime that happens, it's very good for the entire industry. I think it buoys everyone's enthusiasm going forward. And in the end, we invest a lot of time and money, and the end result are the yearlings. That's our crop, and when they're well-received, it makes you feel good about the future.
One of the things, John, that a lot of people discussed coming into the sale was the first crop sires, and those are always a compelling story, and it definitely is part of the theme. But American Pharoah, a unique first crop scenario, really it was horses like Curlin, though, and Medaglia d'Oro and Warfront that really powered these first 4 days.
Yeah, I mean, I think it only makes sense that leading buyers, they're spending a lot of money. There's a lot of inherent risk in the game buying the best of horses. So one of the things you should be sure about is that the yearling you buy is by a sire that is proven can and does get champions. I think that's a requirement. Certainly, if you buy a lot of horses, you can find one exceptional special horse that is by an unknown or unproven sire, or even a horse who may not be the most commercial, but you're just taken by that yearling. So it's not a complete rule, but overall, I think the proven sires are ones that the leading buyers gravitate to, as you'd expect them to.
Well, with all the seven-figure sellers, just a head-turning amount of million and $2 million purchases these first 4 days, and Curlin a big part of that. And what can you say, John, about what Curlin brings to this party? The $1.8 million Molly Morgan colt that Larry Best favored, Godolphin, Bob and Luana Lowe, Eclipse, Jack Oxley, Mike Ryan and Bob Edwards, Viola and Rapoli, Shadwell. Look at the array of buyers that gravitate to Curlin.
Yeah, he really has now a wide and deep buying bench. He's proven he's a classic sire, and anytime somebody will spend $1 million for a yearling, you like to hope and think that you're trying to buy a classic winner. So he's achieved that, and very very proud of the horse, and appreciative to Barbara to stand behind the horse and breed such good mares. And Stone Street bred and raised were so successful at auction, people now look for them. And so I think it's we've got great support, and you only get great support when they achieve on the racetrack. And certainly every year Curlin gets better and better, and he's now attracting mares like Beholder and the Dam of Justified is committed for next year. So he's breeding as good a book as any horse in the world, and that's it's very, very gratifying. But it only works because of his success.
When you're mingling and you're watching the action, and when you're talking to prospective buyers, John, the array of people that have either come into the game, obviously Larry Best is quite a story. There's been a steady parade. Michael Stinson coming in and becoming very active, and there's a nice. It feels like there's a nice drumbeat of new participants that really help, you know, keep the market alive. Let's be honest. And it also feels like there's any number of buying outfits that haven't even had a chance yet, you know, that are really going to only swing into action here for books two and three.
Yeah, I say, you know, book one is really, for me, is no fun. It's very high pressure. You have to be very exact and specific. There's great reward for a few horses, but it's tough sledding, and you're dealing with people that have no margin to say, well, I'll take a little less of this or a little. They have exacting standards, and when they do and it lines up, it's very good, as, you know, the sales top and colt that we sold and a few others. But book two and, you know, forward after that point are really, I don't know how I say this and the way I mean it, but they're real people spending real money. And, you know, from 100 to 600,000, you know, the arena's filled with people. They're active and are going to buy the horse, and you don't know if you'll get a little more or a little less, but when they like your horse, you're very deep, 6 scopes, 8 scopes, 10 scopes. Earlier on, you're dealing with a definitely a tighter, more narrow market, and all it takes is, one man's private jet to be late taking off, and he doesn't show up, or, you know, the rewards are certainly greater, but the risk intensity is heightened. It's much like running an allowance race in the 6-horse field at 3-1 on a Wednesday, or a group one. You look around, you see Chad Brown, Baffert, Fletcher, and there's 10-horse field, and then you're 15-1 as a horse that made $1 million. So, you know, that's the reward, that's the pressure. But if you want to be a buyer or seller at the high end, it's no different than any, you know, other book. It's either they love or they don't, and you know what, the only thing different is the decimal point. So the strategy is the same, and I find try not to overthink it. You're either have the right horse or you don't, and the buyers will tell you quickly by, do they come back again, do they scope, do they, you know, bring their patron, do they ask questions about the horse, whether they're interested or not. So I wouldn't say we're passive, but everybody is so sophisticated, you can't talk someone in or out of a horse. You know, guys like Steve Young, they have firm, strong opinions, they know what they're doing, and you know, if they like the horse, they'll bid, and if they don't, they'll listen politely, but you don't move them. So I try not to get too involved in the process. I'm here if you want to ask me questions, talk to me, or have me advocate for a horse. But, you know, I try to stand out of the way and not be imposing or bother people. And I think for the most part, people appreciate that. They don't really want you hovering over them or explaining things to them.
Well, a lot of what you offer from Hill and Dale speaks for itself, and the first book, the first 4 days, got just a little sampling of a few of the stallions, past Curlin, that are going to really start to show up in force in books two and three. Byron had a pair of sellers, John, 285 and 130. Violence, there were 4 violences offered in book one. All 4 sold, 450, 350, 185, and 150. Kitten's Joy is Kitten's Joy. Did very well. But I'm sure you're as excited or more to see what happens with the Byerns that have a nice buzz to them. And, of course, Violence is getting it done on the racetrack and clearly in the sales ring.
Yeah, you know, with the freshman sires, you know, having, as you said, that buzz is really important. It becomes very organic. You really can't produce it. You know, someone will mention, I saw a nice yearling by a particular sire, for example, Byron, and another person will say it's the same thing, and there's sort of an underground point of view that becomes reality, and that opinion widens, and all of a sudden, you know, the day you sell, you're way busier on the, for example, Byron's than another sire, just because that buzz is there. And Now, sometimes it works in the opposite as well, but, you know, being someone that breeds the sell, but more importantly, wants to breed a racehorse, the telling thing is when the gate opens. So, you know, they can be well received. You can be excited about them. They can sell well. Yeah, that's only half of it. The important thing is that they win races. So we try to, you know, temper our enthusiasm. Every horse we have here, we have for a reason. Some more obvious than others as far as, you know, the public's point of view. But most people are often surprised about a horse they never thought of. He's getting runners, a horse they thought can't miss, doesn't work. So, you know, we try to be level, breed the best mares we can, present the yearlings well, and then hope for the best. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things to like about Byron. Kintaros is a very solid horse that every day gets better and better. Violence is, you know, one horse away from being, you know, the hottest young sire in Kentucky. And the Kitten's Joys were hugely received. I mean, you know, when anyone would have said that, you know, they make $750 and $450 and, you know, that kind of money in the auction ring, you probably wouldn't have been taken seriously. But, you know, now with Roaring Lion and Hawkbill and, you know, great long winners that are owned by people outside of Ken Ramsey, I think the whole world is taking notice that I'd better get one of these because they're winning all the races. So that's very encouraging. I mean, Ken made the horse. All the credit goes to him. But it's nice to see the success spread around to other people because if we're going to sell yearlings to people, they have to have had success with the progeny, and now we can say that's happening, and you know that's a horse too where people are coming to look for them, so that's great.
I want to also give a shout out to my favorite Midnight Loot, who has had this really not late career, but this sustained middle career success, and is a horse that you can count on. Buyers can count on to get a sound runner that is going to produce for him.
Absolutely, you know, he got off to a great start. It's kind of like, it would be like Neil Diamond. You know, a lot of hits, and then went quiet, and then he's going, oh, came out of semi-retirement. So he's back in people's minds, and had a very, you know, very very solid year. He's a really good sire, and you know Mike Pegram and Watson Whiteman, they've been great supporters of the farm, and they're deserving, and I hope that that he'll continue to have such a great rebound year. And you know, I can't think of a horse you'd rather breed to that at his stud fee than him. You know, he gets sales horse, race horse, he gets group one winners, he gets what people are looking for.
Should also say the same thing about McLean's Music, and then, you know, some of the under the radar players like Flashback, Cantheros, Atreides has got a nice representation here in the later books. You know, who would you like to tell everybody make sure that they come and look at one of the under the radar Hillendale stallions that they really need to come and see?
Try to be kind of democratic where we don't push one horse over another. I think there's good representative offspring of all the stallions you just mentioned. And, you know, the reaction of buyers seems to be kind of too abrupt where the horse gets three winners, he's great. If it takes a while to get to three winners, he's terrible. And oftentimes you can flip-flop those two labels. So, you know, trading's got two good maiden allowance winners, and you know, including Del Mar. He's not going to be an early two-year-old sire, but you know, his runners have been promising, and that's exciting to me. Flashback, everyone thought Tappet, we're going to see them early. We're going to see them in April and May, and you know, they're not going to be, you know, the first 2 months of the racing season starting horses. He already has a Group One place filly. Got several winners, so you know he's on the cusp of really proving himself. So we're the time will tell, but we're excited about all of our horses. You have to be, you know, even naively excited about all your horses. And, you know, Violence has a good, you know, several good two-year-olds, including Till They Ran So Well, that Chad Brown trains. Chad Brown also trains Complexity, who won very well for at Saratoga. So, you know, there's the fall of the year is an exciting time. It defines championships. It, you know, narrows horses and funneling them to the Breeders' Cup. Some get over the top, get by. You know, some prove that, you know, there's others better. So this is really an exciting time of year. After the sale, it's all about getting ready for November and, you know, the Breeders' Cup at Churchill. So it's, you know, very, very, very exciting. And then the cycle starts all over again. So we're thrilled that, you know, the market's good. Market for us is that very good book one, but most importantly is that everybody is on the grounds, you know, and when, you know, someone like Sheikh Mohammed, not someone like, exactly like Sheikh Mohammed comes to the sale himself, there's, I can't really describe it. There's an electricity that goes through the sales grounds that's palpable, you know, and you feel very privileged to be in the business that, you know, a man of his stature would find that coming to Kentucky and seeing horses here and coming by your barn would be something that he'd want to do in his day. That's hard to put into words. And then, you know, you get a new man like Larry Best that's having his own approach. Obviously, he's a very successful guy. He's kind of cryptic, quiet behind the scenes, but knows exactly what he's doing. We've got, you know, the Baffert's here and Pletcher's here and Chad Brown's here and, you know, all the guys are here. It's, you know, it's kind of like a film festival where, you know, all the stars are in one place. So it's very rewarding. You know, a lot of the work that we do is behind the scenes, and you go through a long winter, and you know, this mare slipped, and this one didn't work, and that's not. And then to have it all come together and overcome those hurdles and obstacles and come to sale, and then to be fortunate enough to top the sale, it's hard to put into words. It's very gratifying, very rewarding, and you know, it's good to see so many other people sharing the success, and it pays bills and lets everybody move forward. And you know, unlike maybe some other endeavors, whatever anybody makes in the horse business goes right back into the horse business, because you know, true, horses become irrelevant quickly, and you always have to improve and do better and add to your product, and you know, find mares and fix your fences and do so many things. So that's there's a lot of demands, and good yearling sales are necessary to keep, you know, moving forward.
Well, always a pleasure when we can connect with John on these circumstances. The Keeneland sale continues tomorrow, book two. Hillendale can help you at whatever level you're involved in the game. On the consignment front, that's also been a big success, John, for the team. And the $2.4 million Warfront that you handled that went to Coolmore, and whether it's handling mares, whether it's advising people on covers, commercial or racing side of things, whatever anybody wants to do, you are in great hands with John and Donato Lanny and the team, Jared Burdine, Hillendale.com. And John, congratulations on a great start, continued success for everybody going forward, and I'll see you in Kentucky soon enough.
Great. And as I always say, anytime that we speak, thanks for supporting the game and being so enthusiastic and, you know, opinionated and having great guests on and trying to let everybody hear and have access to people in all walks of our business. It's important that we get our message out.
I appreciate that. John Sakura, everybody, and totally approachable, and he can help you if you're interested in getting serious about the game. Hillendale and John should be your first stop. We've reached the bottom of hour 2, 90 minutes in, 90 to come, and we'll go to Mike Beer next. Then we'll circle back to Keeneland and talk to Nicole Russo and preview Book 2, The Weekend, and get Nicole's take. We started our coverage back on Monday with Nicole, and Hammer and Ed DeRosa yet as well. Second half at the races, Weekend Preview here on SiriusXM.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes to the top. Pair of DRF correspondents, different areas. Mike Beer joining us, and Nicole Russo will follow. And nice to get back to Mike with the Belmont season underway. We've kind of, Mike, waded into the Belmont fall with these two three-day race weeks. Things will really kind of dig in earnest starting next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it is nice in some ways to have a little bit of a letdown after the long Saratoga grind. But you're right. I don't remember them doing this last year. Maybe they did this last year, too, with the 2 3-day weekends. I don't remember that. And, you know, unfortunately, the weather hasn't really cooperated with us again since we've been back down here. They're off the turf again today, except for one race. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it is nice to have at least a little bit of a letdown after Saratoga, that's for sure.
I agree. I talked to Andy yesterday, and he laughingly said, "Yeah, reminds me of the scene in Hudsucker Proxy. The final decision is up to you. Well, I'm for it.
He was
like, I'm quite pleased. He's going to movies. He's running up to Boston. It's, you know, after the intense Saratoga season. And we haven't spoken, in fact, since the end of Saratoga. How did the meet end up for you?
It ended up horribly for me, unfortunately. I had, a great first 3 weeks, and towards the end, I really couldn't get anything going. Certainly I was one who was, by the time they got to the last 3 days, I was ready to get out of there, Steve. I don't know about you. How did you end up? Hopefully you ended up a little bit better than that.
I did. I ended up, I had, the first 10, 12 days were a little goofy, and I identified what I felt were the pressures of the social aspects, I had to host a fundraiser, which I was happy to do, and there were tons of people that came in the first week or so, and so I found myself on my heels in terms of getting out ahead of the handicapping, and I wasn't able to, be 2 days ahead, at least a day ahead. And until I got to that point where I was able to catch up and, fold in things like the Welsh's Clocker Report and really feel like I was in front of things. It took about 10, 12 days. And the horse that I will maintain got things going for me was Collegeville Girl. And that was the first the sort of spurs to the hind quarters that provided momentum. Yeah. So from that point on.
I'm pretty sure the Collegeville Girl day, I think that day, that was maybe 12 days in, somewhere around there. That might have been like my last really, really good day of the meet. I might have had one good day after that, but that might have been like just where it started to go the other way for me. It spurred you on and it started to take me down. Yeah.
Well, it's a funny. It is funny because the ebbs and flows. I mean, people think that it's a short meet, it's a boutique meet, but bullshit. It's a long meet, and the 6 day a week makes it. People keep talking about whether we're going to work. We're going to run 5 days a week, 8 right. weeks, right. or what, and. If we do that, I think it will help players. I mean, I think that the 6 day a week, I bring this up, and Andy, when I discuss it with Andy, he scoffs at it. But I think the 6 day a week does not help anybody. I'm talking about players.
Yeah.
It's too much, and we're looking at 10 and 11 race cards with big fields for the most part, and we're not used to it, and that's another part of getting into that theme. And so you like you said, you could either start big and then it wears you down, or you're on your heels and you gotta dig your heels in and gain some traction. So there's so many different ways to approach this meet, but I think a 5 day going to 5 day a week, which is still unusual in this era, would really be a plus.
I'll agree with you. I think it remains to be seen how it would play out. I mean, going to whatever 8 weeks up there, that might not even be an ideal situation either. But I'll side with you at this point. I think the 6 day of racing up there makes it really, really difficult. There are no breathers, and so, just trying to maintain your work and keep up with everything, to me, it's almost impossible for me to do it up there. And I'll just add in, not that I'm complaining about this, I have the job that I have, and I love the job that I have, but the deadlines, the DRF
right,
puts on
right.
us up there, just there, for me, it's impossible for me to do, the best job that I want to do up there, just because, they don't want, with a print production, it's totally different, and
that's
they don't
right.
want to have the print sites open every day of the week, and so they just double up my deadlines twice a week. And to me, it just makes it almost impossible for me to keep up with the work that I want to keep up with. So I would be happy to see them go to 5 days.
Fair points too, because I know from particularly during Derby time and the 2 weeks at Churchill, and knowing how the staff has to get selections in. particularly for Derby, way out in front. I mean, it's so hard, and you're capping and you're writing the analysis too, so you don't even know about weather. That's another aspect.
I mean, I'm doing 2 days twice a week, so you know, have to get Sunday and Monday done on the same day, and then have to get Wednesday and Thursday done on the same day. For a Saratoga card, that's way too hard. And, you know, with no access to weather, you're right about that. No access. You brought the Clocker Report, which I find pretty valuable. My deadline comes way before the Clocker Report comes out. I don't get to see any of that stuff, you know, as far as the yard rate go either. So, you know, all those things sort of play into it. But still, you know, Saratoga is obviously the greatest meet of the year. I love it every year, but it's a real, real grind, that's for sure.
Well, the one thing I've been missing here, even with just 6 days of racing at Belmont, no Clocker Report, and you get used to that too. You get, especially for the maidens. I know people get scared of maiden races. For me, at Saratoga this summer, there was countless horses that I either included in tickets or leaned on heavily or discounted, and I'm going to say 85% of the time the clocking information was really impactful in the results, and that I'm going to miss here in the fall, particularly with the maidens.
I agree with that too. 100%. I mean, it's just so helpful for the 2-year-old races at Saratoga just to have that extra little bit of information that you can't get. And so it's really helpful. You don't get it. It's unfortunate they don't do it at Belmont, too, because there's, you know, this is that fall meet. This is where there's a lot of good maiden races coming up here next month or two. So it would be nice to have it.
Oh, well, including tomorrow, you've got maidens going in the second, 2-year-old fillies going 1/16 on the grass. Quite a few first-time starters. You've also got 2-year-old New York breds going 6 on the inner turf. Those are fillies. That's the third race. And there's also 2-year-old fillies, more or less a split division, in the fifth. We're not going to worry about those for tomorrow. We're going to talk about the 6th through the 10th. And we'll also fold in some Woodbine. I had Keith McCalman earlier. We'll talk about the Sands Point and that 35 non-3 that are part of the cross-country pick 4, but start the pick 5 action here, if you would, Mike. The state breds going 1/16 in the 6th race. I love these races.
I do too. You know, I don't know about this field. To me, this is one of those, you know, 1Xs that sometimes these races come up really competitive and sometimes they don't. I didn't think this one came up all that competitive. I sided with the logical horse in the race, who I feel like probably most people will go to in Mango M for Shug. He's just a horse who's come back as a 3-year-old on turf, and he's better than he was on dirt. He ran well in his seasonal debut sprinting. They stretched him out 3 furlongs for a second start, and I know he got an easy trip on the lead in there, but you know, he won that race very easily. He had a lot of trouble in that Saratoga race last time. I think anybody who goes back and looks at the replay, it's pretty hard to miss. He didn't break great. He was just buried down on the rail all through the stretch, never really got a chance to run. Don't know if he was going to win, but he was certainly going to be a lot closer than he was. And I just feel like he's come back now into a race that it just didn't come up that good, I don't think. I mean, these horses have had their chances. Most of them have been racing cheaply. I just think it's a field he's probably supposed to be, unless Chad's horse, Gambler's Fallacy, is a turf horse. You know, we'll see about that. His debut, you know, he made sort of an eye-catching run in there, but he just didn't have any speed at all. That race was getting very, very hungry late, I thought. So he was just a horse I didn't trust all that much. Maybe he'll be better on the turf, but I'm siding with Mango M in this race.
Well, and Violence, the sire of Gambler's Fallacy, not tremendous as a first turfer, 9% from 55 runners and 9% overall on with his grass runners. Gambler's Fallacy, the Chad Brown in question that had been intended for the turf, rained off at Saratoga and then proceeded to win anyway. The two horses I think are worth mentioning, Ides of Arch, down inside for Leah Giamatti, trying the condition for a fourth time. And New Jersey John, you know, one thing that Saratoga did may have opened the eyes of people to Mike Denny and his abilities.
I agree with that. He didn't run many, but all of them ran well up there. He actually ran a couple at the Belmont Spring Meet, too, who also ran really well. So, yeah, he's a guy that you want to take seriously when he ships in. I hear, you know, New Jersey John, in a lot of ways, can have sort of the same excuse Mangalem had last time, sort of in traffic down on the rail in that same race last time. I felt like his trip was better. I did think he had a chance to get through. He just didn't have enough horse. But either way, his form recently has improved for Mike Denny, that's for sure. And he's got some tactical speed. I can see him being effective in this race. I don't know. I'm with you on Ides of Arch. He's just a horse. I took a long look at him again, but I've been doing that since basically the beginning of his career. I'm sort of waiting for this horse to take a step forward, and so far he hasn't done it. Maybe he'll do it on Saturday.
The start of the pick four and the second leg of the pick five is a filly and mare allowance going seven on the dirt. And this group kind of confounded me for a couple of minutes. And ultimately I went back to the Chris Engelhart, that Curiouser and Curiouser that we saw win at Saratoga late in the meet, and won well, actually, in that spot. And, in fact, Leah's Dream, who Curious and Curiouser beat, came back to win out of that race, as it happens already. 5-2, nothing special on the price basis, but why is she not tough right back, even making the jump from the starter allowance company to condition?
It's going to be interesting to see what she does in this race, because you're right. There's no denying that this filly has turned her career around since Chris Engelhart took over her training in July. The three races she's run are the best races of her career by far. I mean, she was an easy winner first time for him. She had a real excuse in the second one, just got absolutely crushed at the start of that race, and had no chance after that. And she won easy last time again. The thing that I think you like about her in a race like this is she's got a little bit of speed, and it's just another one of those 1X races. You know, again, sometimes they come up really tough and sometimes they don't. This one is super weak, I thought. So I think she's a contender. I didn't pick her on top, but I would definitely use her in the picks. I have no argument with Ascot Walk for Kieran being the horse to beat in this race. You know, she's lightly raced. She's run pretty well in all three of her starts. And, you know, I do feel like that was a good field she was in last time. She had a fairly good trip in that race, and she ran fine. But it didn't sort of point her out to be any kind of, you know, superior talent, that's for sure. I think she is the horse to beat in here. The other horse for me is Palladium Bridge. And, you know, it took me a while to get there with her, but it's just one of those things where, you know, she's sort of in and out. She's not that easy to trust. Some days she just won't show up at all. And that happened last time at Saratoga. She acted up very badly before that race. And for whatever reason, Irad, who was riding that day, decided to rate her. And you can't rate her. I mean, she doesn't want to be back off the pace like that, like she wasn't there. She just didn't run at all. I'm going to forgive her for that race and hope that she'll run something like she ran two starts back on that opening day race at Saratoga. She ran great that day. They put her on the lead. That was a good field of horses. She was still there inside the 16th pole, and she just got run down at the end. I thought she ran great. And I think her form's really improved for Ray Handel, and she's in a race here that doesn't have a lot of speed, Steve. I think Dylan Davis has to send her to the front in this race and try and wire this field, because at the end of the day, she has races that are good enough, and this field just isn't that good. I'm hoping she gets to the lead in this race and doesn't look back.
Well, and that is a formula for her. I certainly can see it as well. Ascot Walk, okay, too, for Kieran.
Yeah.
And, you know, respect what this Daher filly has done so far for Shadwell. Let's look at the 35-non-3, and this is the second leg of the Woodbine Belmont Cross Country Pick Four, and we'll talk about the Woodbine Mile in a minute. Assuming everybody gets through the Woodbine Mile, what do they have to do to get through this eighth race at Belmont? 35-non-3.
I felt like it probably came down to one of three horses in here, either the 4, the 5, or the 7. I preferred the 7, Enthusiastic Gal. I like, you know, there's that big layoff with her. She missed a ton of time. I think she missed the entirety of her 4-year-old season, 5-year-old season. So basically her 3 and 4-year-old season, right? Or 4 and 5-year-old season. She missed everything. So, I mean, it's just a big layoff with her. But she was good when she started out, and she's come back. She had some really tough trips. Those first two starts back at Pimlico and Monmouth, I mean, she had impossible trips in those races and actually ran well. When they brought her to Belmont, Chris Harris, we've talked about him before, Steve, when I've been on your show. When he shipped him to New York, I mean, just take his horses really seriously. She won easily that claiming race back in July. And then she came back at Laurel last time, and again, she got wired, had to try to come up the inside in the stretch. She was making up ground at the end. I thought she ran great last time. I really like her. I think she's underrated, and I think she's better than she looks on paper. I like her in this race. I'm afraid of Canny, the 5, who's dropping in class. A filly who has speed. She obviously has the back races to be tough in a race like this. She's run against some, pretty good horses in her recent starts. I know her form so far in 2018 doesn't look great, but it's just so easy to make excuses for them. She got tired off the layoff. They tried to go a mile and a half with her in her next start against Santa Monica, a Chad horse who's a graded stakes winner, a sloppy track race, 2 starts back off the turf, and then just a wicked pressure-packed pace last time that went to closers, and she just got tired. I could just excuse all of her races this year. So I think she's really dangerous, and I get Arch of Troy, who's been fine for Mott since she got over here. But, she's the morning line favorite and doesn't have to win this race. So I would use her, but I'm mostly the 7 and the 5 in this race.
Well, and the one thing that I noted in here, and it really wasn't until I looked at the race a second time, I was trying to figure out why I was struggling, and it was because there's a number of horses here that don't win very often. And one of the things that's nice about Enthusiastic Gal is that she won recently. She won that 49-2 here at Belmont before she went down to Laurel. And Claceris, very clever, and has got the use of half a dozen condition books to pick spots. Rad Ortiz rides back out of that race and out of that win, and so that's something to like. Grandpa's Ariana for Kieran McLaughlin and Peter Deutsch only wins, it seems, when she gets the lead. And I'm curious because there's a chance that she gets the lead here, no?
Yeah, there is. We'll see. I hear what you're saying. I do think she's dangerous speed in this race. I just don't think she's that good. The 2 wins that she has, obviously both when she got loose, both in really cheap races too. I don't know. I don't think she's that good. And I do think I think Canny's better than she is, and Canny has speed. And I don't think Grandpa's Ariana is getting loose in this race unless Joe Bravo just decides to let her go. And I just don't see why he would do that. I think Canny's better than she is. To me, Grandpa's Ariana is dangerous only if she gets loose, and I didn't see her getting loose.
Well, Blue Atlas, too, who's stretching out from 5.5, that usually is a formula for going forward and getting involved. So
it's a real question for her, though. The distance is a real question for her. She's taking a big class drop here. So far, she's been better sprinting, but maybe she'll be fine going longer against horses like this.
Let's go to the Sands Point, and this is a fun race, and it hasn't gotten a lot of attention with the Woodbine Mile card overshadowing everything, but this is a good group, and a lot of things could happen here, including the opportunity for Flavian Pratt to potentially put on a show with the invading California Gold Rush, who may be better than anyone knows.
I think that's true. I think she's a real wild card in here in some ways, because I don't know how much attention she actually gets with all the imports and, there's so much going on in this field. I loved her two races last year as a 2-year-old. Basically as a 2-year-old, the one was in February as a 3-year-old. But those first 2 races, I thought she ran great both times. And, the Del Mar Oaks, to me, I struggled with that race a little bit more, if only because I think on paper, her Del Mar Oaks has everything that you like, off of a layoff, basically her 3-year-old debut, grade 1 race, going a mile and 8 for the first time, and she improves her figure by 15 points and runs third. All those things look great to me on paper when I watched the race. I didn't think she ran that great. I thought she got a halfway decent trip in there and never really made a race of it and was no match for the 1-2 finishers. That being said, I don't know, how hard I want to be on her for it. I think she'll get a good trip in this race, because the one thing about this race I thought, and it's hard to tell with all the European shippers, is trips are going to be paramount. There's not a lot of pace in this race. A mile and an eighth on the inner turf, you have to get forward and you have to save some ground early. And she's going to be able to do that because I think she has the kind of speed that's going to lend herself to that trip. And so I think she's dangerous. I like her a lot as a horse. I do think Capla Temptress Vermont is the horse to beat. I don't know if everybody sees it that way. I think that she is. I think she's run well at all of her races. Obviously, as it turns out, she wasn't going to beat Rushing Fall last time. It was just too good for her, but she ran a very good race last time. Very conservative ride, I thought, from Le Perroux. And she wasn't going to win anyway, so it didn't matter. But she ran great last time, and I think she's the horse to beat. I'm not, you know, way against her, but I felt like California Gold Rush could certainly beat her. And of the European, the three French fillies shipping in, Chad's got two of them. You know, maybe that's the way to go. I didn't love those two horses. I did get interested in Victorine, though, the five. We'll see what happens. She doesn't have the Group 1 credentials, but her wins 2 and 3 back. If you can go get the video for those, they're very visually impressive wins. And both times, she showed the kind of positional speed that you don't always see from horses like this. She gets forward in her races, and she's very comfortable tracking the pace. And she did that again last time, just got sort of buried down on their inside behind the horse who wired the field, and she couldn't catch her in the stretch. But I like her running style, Steve, and I like her last three races a lot. And I just thought maybe she got, you know, she'll get lost in the shuffle here at a price. I was going to use her with Tampa Tetris and California Gold Rush.
Very nice. Victorine, 8-1, and absolutely, you know, given the obscurity of the connections involved, it's not like, you know, it's not like you're dealing with Christophe Soumillon and right. Andre Favre. You know, it's a relative mystery horse from that front, and that's one of the features. The California Gold Rush, I think, is also going to get overlooked. So I like the approach. A very fun addition to the Sands Point. Before we look at the Toronto races, the 32 claimer that closes out the sequence, the pick five, the pick six, the pick four.
Yeah, I wound up, I thought this was a wide open race, and I would take, if I was playing the multis at Belmont, I would take some coverage in here. I picked Timeless Beauty. I just like her last two races. They came for two different trainers, but, you know, she's upped her game in her last two. Finished very well both times. Pat Reynolds, Robert Amendola, they've been teaming up with nothing but live horses all year long, so I don't mind them claiming this horse. I like her last two races a lot. I picked her. You know, Karen's Gem can win. I'm not a huge fan. Ray Handel does a great job off the claim, but I'm not a really big fan of her. If she can win, I would use her. Riata's Reward, I could go either way on her. I like her speed. That's what I like about her. Last time just went way too fast on the lead and got tired at the end. So she actually ran better than it looked last time. You know, I think she's dangerous. Maybe if she can make the front in here. And our girl Abby, I would use defensively. I don't know what happened last time. You go watch that race, and she was awful in there, but her race is 2 and 3 back. Give her a chance. I'd try to use her somewhere, but I like Timeless Beauty in the last.
I like it. And Amendola and Patty Reynolds are going to be a formidable, that's a terrific pairing, because Pat has been patching up claimers his entire career and made stake horses out of some of them. A very nice client for the very capable Pat Reynolds. Was one of the great under-the-radar stories of the summer. Let's hit the highlights and Toronto, because the Woodbine Mile and the Canadian tie-in, of course, to those two races we talked about, the 8th and the 9th, the 35-non-3, and the Sands Point for a cross-country pick four.
Yeah, the Woodbine Mile is a very interesting race. I wish I could have more confidence in Oscar Performance out of the Arlington Million, because I really prefer him going distances like this than I do. I know he's obviously capable at, you know, longer distances, but I prefer him in races like this. I don't know what happened last time. Obviously, he's fine. He's going to show up in the Woodbine Mile, but just concerns me a little bit. I'm not way against him in here, but the more I looked at the race, you know, my thing with Good, and I don't know if Good Samaritan is really going to be 10-1 in this race, Steve. It seems like he's not. But my thing with Good Samaritan is I don't like his dirt races. There is not, they switched him to dirt last summer at Saratoga for the Jim Bandy. There's not one race that he's run on dirt that I like. I don't think he's a good dirt horse, and I think he's a really good turf horse, and I'm really happy to see him back on the grass in a race that should have some pace to set him up. You know, Oscar Performance sort of had his number when they were, you know, 2 and 3, but every one of those races, Oscar Performance had the best of it. This horse had the worst of it. I don't know. I'm taking my chances with Good Samaritan back on turf in this race.
Interesting. You also get the services of Rosario and The what about the Euros? The
I'm afraid of Lord Glitters, especially. I don't know. The other one looks Stormy Antarctic. He looks good to me too. I'm afraid of Lord Glitters. I mean, he just shows up and runs every time, and you know we all know now. I mean, he ships these horses over, and they're not the big names from Europe. You know, Mondial East and Soudois, those horses like that. But they run over here, and look at this horse's running lines. He shows up. You know, I'm a little turned off that it took a class drop last time, and he worked really hard to win that race. A Group Three is the favorite, but I mean, he's run well in Group One races over there. He seems like he's shipping over in great form. You know, just for a guy who wins races when he ships over here. So I'm afraid of that horse, and I'm definitely using Lord Glitters. I'm Lord Glitters with Good Samaritan and Oscar Performance. Those are the three horses I liked in this race.
Very good. Move on then to the Canadian, which follows and would be leg C of the cross country pick four.
Yeah, I don't really have a big opinion in here. Chad's got two. They look like they're sort of standouts on paper in Flexibility and New Money Honey. I don't think either one of them's necessarily that great. You know, New Money Honey's form, you know, we'll see where she goes from here. I'm not sure if she's going to get better from here or not. I do believe, personally, that she's a better horse than Inflexibility is. I know Inflexibility's last two races look really good on paper. And I did think she ran well two starts back on a fast pace, but I don't know. I just don't think she's that good. One of them will probably win, Steve. I couldn't find the right alternative, I guess, was the problem I had with the race. I'm going to obviously use those two. And the only other horse I'm going to cover is Mythical Mission. I don't know if she's good enough. I figure she's not. But she wasn't that far off Inflexibility last year. And so I'm hoping that Grand Motion can just sort of get her there. There's going to be a pretty good pace in this race, it seems like. Maybe she'll get the right trip. I don't know. I'm going to use her and obviously cover the two Chads who I'm not in love with.
Jump to the Northern Dancer, the Grade 1, the end of the All Stakes Pick 4 in Toronto. And, Mike, I had a fun conversation with Andy last night, and we both yesterday at one point or another remembered, looking at PPs, that Mechtal had shown up in New York and then disappeared from view. And he looks like a beach ball in here to me.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I don't want to be, like, way against Hawkbill, who's the best horse and has speed, but I don't know. It's hard to shake his performance in this race last year. I don't know how he didn't win that race. It makes me want to bet against him at a short price. And Mechtal, listen, we'll see what happens. That, if nothing else, his race last time didn't set up that great for him. You know, Tizza Slam wired the field. They didn't go fast, and he was trying to close all through the stretch. He was making up ground. He wasn't getting there, but he was making up ground. This race should be run to suit him a little bit better. There should be more pace in here. You know, he's obviously good enough on back form. He's a Group One winner in France. I remember him coming to New York and not running at all behind Beach Patrol. I do remember him running the Arlington Million last year and getting a brutal trip and ride in that race. He ran a lot better than it looks. I don't know. He seems like the logical alternative to Hawkbill to me, and I think you want an alternative to Hawkbill in this race.
Agreed. And you also, you know, not that Alan Garcia, you know, who rides the other Grand Motion horse in Utmost, I'm not trying to mm-hmm. besmirch Alan Garcia mm-hmm. any more than I have to. but let's be honest. This is a mammoth upgrade. What are we supposed to say? He's got Jose Ortiz.
It's a huge rider change. It's 100% true. I respect what you're trying to say, but you're 100% right. It's a huge a change that can't go unnoticed. Listen, Utmost is a good horse. His last two races, his two races are both good since Graham took him over. But, you know, it's obviously, I think, a positive for Mechtal that he gets the rider change and that horse doesn't. I think Utmost can win, though. He's a horse that I would maybe use defensively somewhere.
Well, it's always fun to connect with Mike Beer, and you got the added bonus insights north of the border. And, of course, you can watch Mike and Dan Illman and various people plucked from their desk at DRF to, when it comes to the race of the day. Use Formulator as well for the race of the day if you've never used it. It's just a tremendous tool. And, Mike, I was hoping to come down today. We've got the little filly, Midnight Minute Mouse, today in the sixth. I'm going to be hard pressed to get down. So I will see you soon, though. And
yes, we'll catch up another time. Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it.
Tremendous job, Mike Beer, everybody, and you follow Mike on Twitter. Not that he's a huge tweeter, but DRF underscore Beer. Follow him in the pages of DRF where he is a big presence, obviously, as the lead handicapper for quite a while of the New York circuit. Let's take a break. Nicole Russo is going to swing by, and we'll get Nicole's take on book one and some of the final touches to the first portion of the Keeneland sale. Off day today, and then they come back tomorrow, book two, Saturday and Sunday. And then book three and four and five and all the way through until Sunday, the 23rd, the middle market. But frankly, book two may have just as much firepower as book one to some extent, given how many people probably got turned away. The heavy-handed seven-figure and high 500 to 999 horses. Nicole will wrap up book one for us. She started the coverage back on Monday, and she'll preview the weekend. Ed DeRosa, he's up in Toronto, eating his way throughout TO, and Rick Hammerly, too, before we wrap up on this weekend preview at the Races Sirius XM. Nicole next.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Master Sats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.